Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Aton and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is rolling a roll that I'm told. Come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty.
Diagnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Aton Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you for sticking with us. Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast, part of the Dynasty Trade Calculator family of podcasts and brought to you by the Dynasty Trade Calculator themselves. My name is Aton Mosia. This man to my left over here is FF Stompy. You might know him a little bit better by Sam Lane. We are here every week, usually, to go ahead and give you guys a look into our dynasty minds and give you just some ideas on how to interpret the latest happenings in the National Football League. Since we've been gone, a number of huge events have happened. A number of people have gone down. This past week was Bloody Sunday. I want to start with that, man. I just want to ask you, how'd you fare? Like, in all your leagues, were you hit by multiple instances of guys going down in the first quarter?
Well, first and foremost, let's start with this is our first time talking for weeks. So, yeah, thanks for sticking with us, I suppose, those who have stuck with us. We've had some life changes, some technical issues, all of the above. So we really appreciate you sticking with us and listening to us. And I'm excited to be back with you, brother.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
As for the injuries this past Sunday, I was actually pretty well spared. I didn't – when I'm looking at it, maybe DJ Chark is the one that hurt me the most, but – other than that, I was really I made it out pretty clean, so feeling pretty good about that.
Man, lucky you. I was hit just from multiple angles at the same time. It's kind of been that year for me. I had Tyreek on multiple teams. He was out for half the season, essentially. If he wasn't out, then Patrick Mahomes has been in and out of the lineup. I've had injuries to Evan Ingram. This past week, Mark Andrews went down multiple times or in multiple places for me. So that was something to contend with. My Scott Fish Bowl 9 hopes actually rested at the feet of Devontae Parker, who I drafted so long ago. I think we had a conversation about, and he turned out to have a really good season, but him going down, I thought, was my downfall. I thought that was going to be the death of me. And then Darius slayed him. He slayed them all. Everyone involved. He took no prisoners. Darius Slayton is turning in one of the rookie performances of the ages. In fact, amongst rookie wide receivers that were drafted in round 5 or later, Darius Slayton has the second most yards to only one player. And I think you guys know him by name, Stephon Diggs. I'm going to start here. I think we should start here. I mean, are we seeing truth? Are we seeing shadow? Is this a mirage? Let's talk about all these guys kind of in the same context. Mecole Hardman seemingly scores every time he touches the ball. Terry McLaurin is doing ridiculous things with one-handed catches in Green Bay's end zone. Darius Slayton is going out and alone, literally alone, with only Golden Tate really to help him out. He's putting defenses to the sword. Now, I understand it was Philadelphia, and definitely that should be kind of thought of when you think of this matchup. But, I mean, these rookies are really doing crazy things this season. Have we undervalued them? Like, is there a universe in which, I mean, these guys are worth firsts, multiple firsts going into next season? Or is this just a situation kind of like I feel where we're seeing a lot of production, but we're seeing a lot of production because of a lack of alternatives in their offense? Evan Ingram's been out about half the season, and Darius Slayton has certainly benefited from the extra looks. He's had a lot of blow-up games in the games that he's not sharing the field with Evan Ingram. Do we think that this is a situation where these rookies are finding pay dirt and really finding their stride in the NFL very, very quickly? Or is this a situation where they're putting up points, they're putting up numbers for lack of better alternatives on their teams?
I think you can say that for Slayton right now. For McLaurin, they're just, I mean, there's not a better option. I would expect them to draft a wide receiver in this kind of draft.
They absolutely have to.
That's the one that I think deserves, he deserves a first in value, but like Slayton's hard to gauge because, like you said, Ingram's been out half the season. Sterling Shepard was out for a significant amount of time.
Teams are selling out against the run completely.
Even then, Saquon was out for 3 weeks as well. So Slayton, and it's not like you can trust Cody Latimer and Benny Fowler, who is now no longer on the team. So, I mean, Slayton's a guy that stepped up. And yes, guys talked about Darius Slayton in the preseason, and he has talent, and they do need outside receivers, sure. And Golden Tate's 31. We just don't know what's going to happen with Sterling Shepard because of his concussion. So he's definitely a guy that you should be stashing at the very least. But in terms of his value, I mean, right now, if you could, I would sell for a second. I don't think you're going to get a first for him. McLaurin definitely deserves a first because he put up numbers the first half of the season. Got a garbage time touchdown against Green Bay to salvage his day there with Dwayne Haskins. And that's an unknown issue right there. So if you could get a first for Terry McLaurin, I would probably be trying to sell him there too. The only rookie that the rookie that I like the most in terms of wide receivers is Preston Williams. I mean, Preston Williams did it basically all season until he got injured. And I mean, he was involved the entire season, and he had a weird QB situation the entire season. So I felt like he is the best rookie wide receiver we've seen this season, personally.
Oddly enough, he also is the rookie receiver that is kind of insulated the most from having additional guys battling him for targets potentially next season. I mean, that team kind of already has the talent that it needs at pass catcher to really kind of put up some points here. We have him, Devontae Parker, still signed for another season if he can continue this career resurgence. Mike Gesicki seems to finally begin to start to put it together. I really do think that maybe we can see the Dolphins go a different direction in the first round, whereas I see no other option for teams like New York, for teams like Washington, than to go out and to try to get a receiver.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't know what's going to – I think Parker is tied with Miami for next year. The only question is what that QB situation looks like. But like I said, you had Rosen starting three games and came in for a significant portion of a couple other games. Fitzpatrick has been in and out. So he's had a relatively rough QB situation. So I don't think bringing in somebody like – and now I think they're out of the running for Joe Burrow, but let's just say they do bring in Tua or Jordan Love just declared. I don't think that's going to be a worse situation than what the Dolphins have faced this season already. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, Williams, as a rookie with a bad QB situation, put up numbers, and I think he can only go up from here.
Yeah, and I think you probably have to envision somebody like Swift on that team next year as well, really bolstering that offense all around. I think we can see the Miami Dolphins start to put up points next season, even if they decide to keep Fitzpatrick around. But let's talk about guys that are going to be around. Ryan Tannehill. Is Ryan Tannehill better than Aaron Rodgers? Are we here? Is this where we've reached in fantasy football now?
That is an ongoing joke with my other co-hosts and I about, because I think I did it here at the beginning of the season, that Ryan Tannehill would unseat Marcus Mariota. That has happened, and then Ryan Tannehill has been
agreed on that.
Tannehill has been the QB3, the QB fantasy QB3 since week 7. Like, that's bananas. And I don't remember I know one of them's Lamar Jackson. I don't remember who the other one is.
Crazy efficiency too, because it's not on much volume. He doesn't throw all that often. Derrick Henry is still the focal point of that Tennessee Titans offense. But with A.J. Brown kind of making huge gains for himself and, you know, Corey Davising, Ryan Tannehill has really looked like a long-term solution for Tennessee. I think they're already in talks of a contract extension. I think you have to start around the franchise tag, which is about $27 million next season per year, to go ahead and sign Ryan Tannehill. I think you have to give him at least 22, 23 to even be interested.
Yeah, I would say around the $20 million mark. If you gave him like 3 years, $20 million, and a decent amount of that guaranteed, I think you could get it done. But yeah, I mean, and I think really if you look at it, this is the most talented team he's had around him and the best coaching staff he's had around him. Mind you, was he with Adam Gase the entirety of his career before now?
Yes, he was.
Well, then there you go. A lot better coach around him. But yeah, I would consider, like, he did have Jarvis Landry down there, but he had Devontae Parker until now. So maybe the funny thing is once they got those two separated, they are doing the best. They are having the best seasons of their career, respective careers, which is hilarious to me. But you have Corey Davis, you have AJ Brown. Jonnu Smith is flashing a little bit this season. You have Derrick Henry,
who can catch passes.
Adam Humphries. I think the best team that Ryan Tannehill has had around him, and he's performing. And it's not like he was a terrible QB in Miami. He wasn't good by any means, but he wasn't terrible. And now you're actually seeing a good QB out of Tannehill. So I can't say that Tannehill's better than Rodgers. Like, I viscerally cannot say that. Like, I have a visceral reaction to that. But I can say that their careers are going in different trajectories. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers being in his late 30s here, or starting to be in his late 30s, they're starting to rely more heavily on the running backs. Obviously, Aaron Jones having a career year this year. Jamal Williams getting very involved. Aaron Rodgers having one of the worst seasons of his career since he became a starter. So it honestly kind of reminds me of John Elway towards the end of his career, where you got Terrell Davis, you got a good offensive line. You didn't need to rely on John Elway's arm to carry you to the Super Bowl. That's what this kind of looks like for Aaron Rodgers, and I would not be surprised to see him throw less and them to continue to rely on those running backs.
That's a great comparison. That's definitely the comparison that I was going to make, because I was going to shift this over to talking about Aaron Jones and the Green Bay Packers this year. There's been a number of backs that have kind of had differing seasons. We've had a lot of injuries, have question marks surrounding guys. We've had a lot of guys that were top-end performers last year not quite get it done this year. Let's talk about some value switches and some value changes that we've seen at the running back position so far this year, and I think we have to start with Aaron Jones. I don't think Aaron Jones at this point can reasonably be seen as anything less than a top five back. And you have to understand that him being in the top five does not necessarily mean he's going to be a top five back week in, week out. I don't think that's who Aaron Jones is. And that's not what we've seen from the Green Bay Packers in terms of the touch split between him and Jamal Williams. Though throughout the season, he has always seen just a little bit more than Jamal Williams. But I think at this point, he can have those blow-up games where he gets 2-3 touchdowns or he gets 100 yards and a touchdown pretty much every other week. This is how the Green Bay Packers are using Aaron Jones, and I think that's the key thing about him. People forget that he's most closely comparable to Christian McCaffrey in terms of athleticism. Aaron Jones is a guy that can be a three-down back. The only question about Aaron Jones to date has been health, but so far this season, I mean, he's 9th in yards created. He's 12th in yards created per carry, 24th in total fantasy points per opportunity, and he's been very involved in the pass game as well. I really do think that Aaron Jones, Dalvin Cook, I don't see much of a disparity between both of them. I really do think that going into next season, we're going to see a lot of Aaron Jones maybe creeping up into the back end of the first round, if not the very, very top pick of the second round in startup drafts.
Yeah, that's tough for me. I'd much rather have Dalvin Cook just because of situation. Yes, the Alexander Mattison exists, but if you look at the touch splits between Alexander Mattison and Dalvin Cook versus Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones, mind you, Jamal Williams is not going anywhere next year. They're in what, year three of their contract? Or year four, sorry.
They're both signed for an additional season, I believe.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where I think, I mean, and Jamal Williams has shown enough this year to me that he can should get more touches, but that doesn't take away from Aaron Jones. I mean, Aaron Jones getting 15 to 20 touches, that's all he really needs. But like to continue to get the volume. So the comparison between Cook and Jones, I think it's a tier difference there where Dalvin Cook is a tier above Aaron Jones. I would say that Aaron Jones is more of a second round, mid second to late second round pick. Personally, with all of like wide receivers, tight ends, whatever involved. But yeah, I mean, he should be creeping up in drafts.
Yeah. The reason that I like Aaron Jones, I mean, obviously usage both on the ground and through the air is going to be heavily split in Green Bay, but it's the through the air that really gets me intrigued about Aaron Jones because we know how valuable those touches are for RBs. Aaron Jones has been an absolute monster this season, especially in the weeks that Devontae Adams was injured for the Packers. I think that really forced that coaching staff to really start to look at Aaron Jones in a different way, and I think that's where the increase in value comes from. But yeah, I mean, we just have to agree to disagree here. Maybe we'll take it halfway. We'll say top of the second. That's kind of the median between both of us. But absolutely, Aaron Jones is, I think, one of the premier backs in the NFL. Now we're going to go to Alvin Kamara, who was the premier pass catcher and is still having that role, so to speak. But, I mean, we're seeing almost nothing from him on the ground behind one of the best offensive lines in football. He's not finding the end zone. It looks like it's going to be Drew Brees and Sean Payton throwing it all over again. I mean, should we start to worry about Alvin Kamara for next season? I mean,
I wouldn't personally worry. I'm not even letting you finish that stupid goddamn question. Absolutely not. I've had this guy, John Hogue, got me so irate the other day. Because he used the word sucks when it comes to Alvin Kamara. And I almost lost my mind. The dude is the RB9 right now, and he has scored 2 touchdowns, both in the same week. He is still the RB9. You give him 2 more touchdowns, he's the RB4. So I mean, he's had two single-digit games this season in PPR.
That's the point. I think people get too carried away with looking at touchdown numbers, with looking at box score stats. I think the thing to remember about Alvin Kamara is he's that team's wide receiver too, for all intents and purposes. For as long as that team is built the way that it is, for as long as Drew Brees is there, checking it down to those RBs as he has throughout his entire career. I think those are the types of guys that people don't really appreciate until it's gone. It's the guys that, even if they're not getting you blow-up games, they're still able to get you 10 to 12 a week, game in, game out. And we've been seeing something like that from from Alvin Kamara throughout the season, despite the touchdowns not necessarily being there.
So here's the difference between Aaron Jones and Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara gets he's had two games of three targets. Everything else has been six or more targets in every game, including several games of eight or more targets. And he just hasn't scored touchdowns this season. Yes, he scored an inordinate amount number of touchdowns in his rookie season and even last year, so he's due for regression. But this swung the other way. So I mean, next year, if he's going to be discounted, I would be taking him all over if he's in the late first, because he's still going to get you top 10 numbers, and he's probably going to score five more. And this is just a complete guess, but he's going to score a lot more touchdowns, maybe not a lot more, but several more touchdowns next year, to the point where he's probably going to be in the conversation for top five again.
I'm in full agreement with that. Again, you want guys that you can count on to not get you zeros, to not kill you in a week in, week out basis. And if somebody can provide that baseline like Alvin Kamara does and still have the potential to have those blow up games, if he's lucky enough to find the end zone, I really do think that those are the guys that you need to be investing in. And for that reason, I'm trying to buy guys like Alvin Kamara at depressed prices right now if I can. But now we have to kind of go to the other side of things. Some key injuries have really brought up some doubt about the future of some RBs in this league. Kerryon Johnson has missed about half the season. James Conner is said to be practicing this week, but he's been out for a number of games as well. And Darius Guy suffered his third likely season-ending injury this past weekend on Bloody Sunday. I mean, where's the rope for these guys? At what point do you have to draw a line in the sand and say, hey, I can't assume this risk on my roster?
Guys, I'm going to use a term here that I don't normally like, but when you have three knee injuries like that in 2 years, if I can get him for like a second, maybe I'm testing that, but I'm not touching him. But he is injury prone at this point for me. And it's not just like Keenan Allen injury prone, where he had a lacerated spleen and a broken collarbone.
No, it's the same thing over and over and over.
Two MCLs and an ACL at this point. So I can't touch him unless he's at like super depressed prices. Kerryon Johnson, he's had issues since high school. This isn't new, and these are soft tissue injuries that he's had. So that one's tough for me, because I really like Kerryon, but first and foremost, he wasn't getting the touches that we thought he was going to this year. And second, he's just injured. So if you could get him for a late first, I'd probably do that. I'd give him one more shot because I guess his first one was a knee. Is this latest one a knee?
I believe so as well. I have to check. Let me see.
Yeah. Connor, I think this is kind of just a weird season for Pittsburgh, because they've had the injuries to Ben. They've had the injury to Juju.
Johnson.
So that's multiple knee injuries for Johnson as well. So that's rough. I'm willing to give him one more shot, but it's got to be like these are depressed prices I'm doing. But Connor, I mean, he's very obviously the most talented running back there, but they've made it work with Benny Snell, and Jalen Samuels.
And you have to remember Connor's draft position as well. He wasn't taken particularly highly. This is now going to be going into the third or fourth season of James Conner's career. He's not tied to that extra fifth season. I mean, Pittsburgh is kind of at a crossroads right now with what it does in terms of its spend. So I think that worrying about James Conner long-term might kind of be in your best interest right now. I don't think he's going to be one of those guys that goes to zero, but much in the same way as Darius Geis, as Kerryon Johnson, I do think if he continues to not be able to finish games, at some point he's not going to get the opportunity to start them.
But I can get behind that too. I mean, I Kerryon, because of his pass catching ability, could be really like an Austin Eckler type. Give him 10 touches a game, just let him be efficient with him. But I just, it's unfortunate, especially in Darius Geis's case, because he was so talented coming out. And I think this third knee injury is just going to, I don't know what else they're going to be able to do there.
And finally, before we actually go to our 5-point inspection, let's talk about Austin Eckler. Let's talk about Austin Eckler, Melvin Gordon. Both of those guys are going to be free agents next season. The Chargers, we talked about the Steelers potentially being at a crossroads. The Chargers don't know if they want to pay Phillip Rivers. And then you still have Hunter Henry. And then you have both of those backs. And as you mentioned before, you're going to have to worry about Keenan Allen in just about a year now. Mike Williams is coming to the end of his rookie contract as well. There's a lot of decisions that the Chargers are going to have to make on offense. I mean, what do we think those are? Do we think that Phillip Rivers is still starting in a Chargers uniform next season? And what effect does that have on the pass catching of those backs? We've seen Rivers do this before with guys like Danny Woodhead, and seeing what Austin Eckler is doing now. If there's a new guy at the helm, potentially one who doesn't check down as much, are we worried about Austin Eckler long-term, even if he stays in Los Angeles for the foreseeable future?
I'm personally not. I think Gordon's gone. I think we all think that Gordon's gone. After this season with Rivers, I don't know how they can justify re-signing him.
The last couple of games have been decent.
Yeah, but I mean, he's gotten a ton of help from Austin Eckler. I mean, Austin Eckler had 100 yards rushing and 100 yards passing and fewer than 15 touches. I'd have to look how many touches it was. Fewer than 15 touches, though. Like, he got a ton of help. So, he's looked terrible all season, basically. And I mean, why not let Tyrod? Why not sign Tyrod to a couple seasons and see what he can do with this team?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be Tyrod. I think it's going to be a rookie. I think that's kind of where the Chargers are at this point, especially if they keep losing games. But yeah, I think the end of Phillip Rivers' career is nigh. But let's now go into our 5-point inspection, and let's shift from the running back position to the quarterback position. Rivers has looked, I mean, you just talked about it. He's looked relatively awful this season. Haskins has looked like Rivers this season. In terms of what he's been able to do, even though that there is a lack of talent on Washington, we've seen Daniel Jones have good games, also throw a bunch of picks. We've seen Jameis Winston throw 4 or 5 touchdowns and 4 or 5 interceptions in the same game, seemingly week in, week out. I mean, is there one of these guys that you're willing to really, really put yourself out there for who you think is going to be a really good guy to still have you on your team moving forward, despite whatever might be happening this season with either the weapons, age catching up to them, or just being insanely mistake prone?
No.
That's the answer to all of these guys. None of these quarterbacks interest you?
Not at all. I mean, in terms of fantasy, Jameis Winston is viable every week in fantasy.
Number two quarterback, I think, over the last 4 or 5 weeks.
But what you have to look at is he going to be on the field? Like, he makes so many mistakes that he does not help his own cause. He doesn't help his team's cause. And if he's not going to help his team win – then why would you put him on the field? So while he can throw for 300 yards every week, he can also throw for three interceptions every week.
The thing with Jameis Winston that I'm paying a lot of attention to is every win that the Buccaneers get on that resume is one win more for Jameis to stay, because they're not going to be able to get a quarterback to replace him. Who's going to be the really big offseason acquisition at quarterback this year? We think it's going to be Cam Newton. If not him, is there anybody else that you can immediately think that you'd want over Jameis?
I don't even know who is a free agent this year.
Going to be Tannehill. It's going to be Jameis. It's going to be Cam is going to be traded most likely.
Marcus Mariota.
Mariota will be out there as well. We're going to talk about the Denver Broncos in just a moment here, so there might be something there as well. But yeah, it looks like for me, it's kind of Cam or bust. And if you don't get Cam, you probably want Jameis. And honestly, if you're looking at Cam, you might be looking at the same thing that Jameis gives you.
I would much rather draft a QB. I would much rather draft a Fromm or a Herbert or Jordan Love or the kid from Oklahoma, and I just forgot, Jalen Hurd, over those two, because I made this argument about Cam Newton. If he doesn't have his legs, he is not a good quarterback. He's never been a good quarterback, a good throwing quarterback. His legs give him a lot of value. And I mean, with this foot injury and him being out the year, he's getting older, and I don't know if he's going to have his legs anymore. And we've already talked about Jameis, and we could talk about Mariota and his not good quarterbacking, but
Marcus Mariota will be the next Alex Smith. I guarantee it.
That'd be funny. I would like that. With this free agency class, like I think Tannehill, I think the Titans are going to sign Tannehill. Or maybe Dalton. Dalton's kind of a middle of the road quarterback. I mean, he's one of those that if you have a great defense, and you just need kind of a game manager type that can win you games from time to time, Dalton's a guy that you can win with. Cincinnati's never had a great defense. So I would much rather take a chance on a rookie quarterback than I would with this free agency class coming up personally.
What would you do if you're the Jaguars? Gardner Minshew, some good, some bad. Nick Foles, you just paid a boatload of money, benched him for Gardner Minshew. I mean, what are they to do moving forward?
Quarterback battle. I mean, you play the best. I think the best example is the Seattle Seahawks. You signed Matt Flynn for a lot of money, and Russell Wilson won the job over him. Let Gardner Minshew, when they're both healthy this offseason, let them battle it out, and you sit whoever is – or you start whoever is the better quarterback. That's how it should go.
Are you investing in Minshew now that there's some uncertainty in the future of that quarterback situation? Do we think he's going to be a starter somewhere?
Investing in terms of fantasy?
In terms of fantasy.
I mean, I would buy him for like a second.
You'd probably have to do a second in a player.
I wouldn't spend more than that right now because of that. I mean, here's my thing. There's a difference, like we can talk about the Broncos here. There's a difference between the Denver Broncos and the Jacksonville Jaguars, where you know that if Drew Lock continues to play well, he doesn't have anybody to battle with. I mean, Joe Flacco's not going to take that job back. I guarantee it. Like, there's nobody like Nick Foles for Drew Lock. So that's the difference there. It's like, I would invest in Drew Lock because he's shown a lot in two games. I understand it's small sample size, but he's shown a lot in two games. It seems like they're giving him the shot towards the end of this year and probably into next year. Whereas with Gardner Minshew, I don't know if he's going to be the starter in the near term.
Yeah, I'm right there with you with Gardner. I want to invest in what I think is talent there. But I do think it might be a while until he starts to see full snaps and starter snaps as a quarterback for any team. I don't necessarily know if that team's going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars. There are going to be a lot of teams that are quarterback needy next season that maybe don't want to spend heavily on a quarterback in the draft and might be willing to trade something like a third round pick for a Gardner Minshew. So I do think that there are scenarios that he plays. I would hold on to him. I think that second, maybe plus a player, lower end guy, maybe one guy that's had a down season. I think that that is who I'm sending for a guy like Gardner Minshew moving forward. But now you've already brought it up. Drew Lock and the Broncos seem to have some life to them. I was completely on the other side of this. I wanted Tua. I wanted Fromm. I wanted Herbert. I wanted somebody else in Denver. But it looks like Drew Lock could potentially be a decent quarterback for the Denver Broncos moving forward. I think the only thing that I've really been able to identify from seeing him play so far is his DGAF attitude. And I kind of love it because he's the guy that will throw it into really, really tight windows thinking that he can make that throw. He has an arm to him. He has some mobility to him. The calling card around him has been his accuracy to date. But with guys like Noah Fant and Cortland Sutton, targets that can essentially make their own separation just with their sheer size, I think he might be in a good situation to succeed long-term in Denver. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, his biggest strength was his arm talent coming out. There were some comparisons to Patrick Mahomes, not good comparisons, but he does have the arm talent. He had the best arm talent of this quarterback class. Now, that's not saying a whole lot, but point being that he can make a lot of throws that many quarterbacks in the NFL cannot. And his biggest issue was his footwork and some of his decision-making. And it seems like he doesn't lack for confidence. So it seems like he has learned learned decision-making while he's been injured. He's making very good throws. Like I'm not going to recall the entirety of these two games, but there's only one bad throw that I feel he has made, and that was that interception against Houston. He just didn't read the safety, and he got picked off. Other than that, I felt like he has been a very good decision maker, and he's been showing off that arm talent. And like you said, he's got two big, fast targets in Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant. And that's all you – I mean, they're building a fantastic young base to this football team. And if he can – and mind you, he's played the Houston Texans and who did they beat in the Los Angeles Chargers. Los Angeles Chargers aren't a bad – or are a very good defense against the pass. So for him to – and mind you, he threw for less than 200 yards, but he did have two touchdowns. So for him to be relatively mistake-free against the Chargers is fantastic. And Houston's been terrible against quarterbacks. But, I mean, I haven't seen a lot that I don't like over these two games. Now, we'll see what he does for the next – what, we have three more games left? But he looks great. And it seems like in Vic Fangio at the beginning of the season said he's kind of like a – he made a pitcher analogy where he's more of a thrower and not a pitcher. And it seems like he's become that pitcher for the Broncos.
Yeah. I mean, look, I just want the Broncos to be decent somehow. If he's a guy that can do it, I am all for it. But now we're going to move on to some of the guys that have been a little bit disappointing this season for various reasons. I mean, Brandon Cooks started his career with 1,000-yard receiving season after 1,000-yard receiving season, 1,000-yard receiving season, only to kind of run into real issues this season, both in the games that he's healthy and not necessarily being healthy with the multiple concussions. Talking about continuous injuries or injuries that seem to pop up over and over again, we've already talked about Evan Engram. He's still very, very young. Cooks is just 27 as well. Both of these guys, kind of in a vacuum, you would want to kind of go after, but I see one in a much different light than I see the other. And then, honestly, we can also kind of toss T.Y. Hilton into this, although he's a little bit older. T.Y. Hilton's been dealing with multiple injuries this season. Adam Thielen has missed games, which is a rarity for him. I mean, is it kind of a situation where we need to really be wary of these receivers moving forward, understanding the potential receiving talent that might be coming up in this next class and the breakouts of all the rookies that we've had so far this season?
Well, I mean, Cooks, no, because he just signed a big contract.
He's there for the long haul, definitely. But Jared Goff is one of the worst deep throwers in the NFL.
That team this year is just really weird to me. Though they looked like the old Rams last week or this past week. So I don't – that offense has just not looked great this season, and I don't know why. I just wonder if it's been figured out or not.
Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp last game played under 30 snaps for the Rams.
I feel like something's going on with Cooper Kupp too, by the way. I think that knee is catching up with him a little bit. There might be some fatigue, but it's that offense, like I said, has been off. So I'm just chalking this up more to just an off year. I mean, he's had the concussion that forced him to miss several games. And the offense has just been bad. So really, I would probably be buying Brandon Cooks at this point, because we've made the point several times on this podcast that Robert Woods probably is a casualty next season. So, I mean, that leaves you Kupp, Cooks, and Josh Reynolds. And I think that gives Cooks more they're going to rely more on Cooks next season. But then again, they could rely on the tight ends. I don't know. But I would probably buy Cooks if I could, just because he's probably at his lowest value of his career. You might be able to get him for maybe a second if somebody's desperate to get rid of him. I don't know if that's the case. But still, I would sell him. I would buy him for a second. T.Y. Hilton.
Sony Michel's around second round value, and I just traded him for Cooks in as many leagues as I could. I'm happy with that deal.
Yeah, I would do that. T.Y. Hilton is a little rough because he, like you said, he's getting up there in age. They have Paris Campbell, they have Marcus Johnson, Zach Pascal.
Next year is actually his last year in Indianapolis, I believe.
So he's not of the like AJ Green type echelon where it's like, yeah, I can deal with these injuries because he's going to put up these monster numbers. So I'm kind of avoiding that situation. I'm probably trying to get out.
You're more bullish on AJ Green than you
are. No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying like AJ Green has had his injuries over the past few years. But when he's in there, he puts up monster numbers. And it's more of a comparison. Like I would not buy AJ Green right now, but like after he battled those foot injuries, let's say, and I believe it was 2016, something like that, I probably would have bought AJ Green. But right now I would not buy T.Y. Hilton because of his age, because of his injuries history, and because of his contract.
What about Adam Thielen?
I said to sell Adam Thielen before the season.
We had numerous conversations about Adam Thielen's drop off the second half of last season.
Now it's not like he looked terrible when he was healthy, but he didn't look like the first half of 2018 Adam Thielen. Olabisi Johnson stepped in and looked good. I don't know. I feel like he's a buy right now because you just haven't seen him. But I feel like some people's values of Adam Thielen right now are like they've stayed flat. So if I could buy him for like a first and it would be like a mid to late first, I would probably buy Adam Thielen right now.
Yeah, for me, the thing that makes me still intrigued in Adam Thielen, despite many fantasy owners' aversion to age is the fact that Adam Thielen just signed a long-term contract with the Minnesota Vikings. So regardless of how this year goes, he's still signed 4 years, $64.2 million, and he's still going to be a member of the Vikings guaranteed through the 2020 season. Now, in 2021, there is a potential out on his contract, but it's really only an $8 million savings, and the cap rises about $11 million a year. So I don't necessarily think that that's a situation that you need to be wary of with Adam Thielen. I think his game can translate to being an older, effective, bully you type receiver rather than the, you know, route running speedster that he is. I think those things are really going to stick with Adam Thielen moving forward. And I think for that reason, I mean, assuming nothing catastrophically happens to Doug Baldwin, I kind of think they have similar games with Adam Thielen having more of an explosive ability to stretch the field than maybe Doug Baldwin did. So for that reason, I really do think that, just like you said, he's still a buy. I'd still pay a first for Adam Thielen, maybe not anything above 104 or so, but if I had to give 105 for Adam Thielen, even with this crazy class that's supposed to come up and change the world, I think I still would. All right, so now let's move into, I think you should be buying injured players. I think that this is one of the biggest edges in Dynasty Fantasy Football, is buying the dip when people are frustrated with injured players. Will Dissly, James O'Shaughnessy, both showed big this year when they had the opportunities in their respective offenses. I do think that they're still going to be valued contributors moving forward. And OJ Howard hasn't necessarily been injured, but now with the injury to Mike Evans, maybe we see him featured in the Bucs offense just a little bit more. Cameron Brate essentially has a year-to-year contract as a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and if they want to spend that money elsewhere, maybe getting an offensive line for once so Jameis Winston doesn't have the most sacks in the NFL. I think that that could be a way that they could do it. I really do think that O.J. Howard is going to still be the long-term top five tight end that we all thought he was going to be at the beginning of this season, despite the lack of usage in Bruce Arians' first year.
I agree on Will Dissly. I mean, he's basically, since he's gotten there, though he has been injured twice now, he has been putting up numbers for Seattle. O'Shaughnessy, I don't necessarily agree with, because I still believe in Josh Oliver, though he has been injured as well. And I definitely agree on OJ Howard. I just have to believe the talent that Howard brings, and hopefully Jameis Winston is no longer there and doesn't, and they don't have, or, and he and Brate don't have that chemistry that a new QB and Howard can develop a chemistry. So I'm all for buying injured players, especially. I've already mentioned Preston Williams. Preston Williams put on or did very well this season, and he's injured, and I'm sure some people have forgotten about him, but I think Preston Williams is a great buy right now, because I think, like we talked about earlier, he's in a good situation that only can get better, in my opinion. You have to look at guys that have put up numbers or been decent in the NFL and seem to be forgotten about. We talked about Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks dealt with injuries. He's been kind of having an off year. By him, he had four straight 1,000-yard seasons. That's not, I mean, it, with three different quarterbacks, mind you. So it's not like it's a coincidence or luck. He is putting up fantastic numbers for a reason. So buy injured players if you can, especially when you know that they can produce in the NFL.
Let's talk about the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen, he may not necessarily be the strict term of a quarterback, but he is a baller. He's a guy that can win games with his legs, with his arm. He just kind of has that passion that seems to pull that team over the hump. We've seen a career resurgence from Cole Beasley, who said, he interesting enough, that he left Dallas to win games and then put up 100 yards plus on Dallas. But I mean, let's go to the interesting players on that team. Devin Singletary, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not he's going to retain his role next season, as the Buffalo Bills will definitely have ample opportunity to add to that backfield. And then we have to talk about old man Rivers, John Brown, who is 29 years old, going into his age 30 season next year, has had a tremendous season so far, and is actually signed through 2021 if they don't take it out on his contract this season, which really would only save them $7 million. Next season, it would still be around the same $7 million that they would save letting him go. I think, oddly enough, with his age, John Brown might be a buy in an attempt to sell him at some point next season, or as soon as he has the same type of solid season that he's had this year. I think people haven't necessarily caught up to what John Brown might actually be worth in dynasty leagues. And I think that this might be a situation where you can buy, sell at opportune times and end up coming ahead with a lot of capital and still having the points of John Brown for 10 games or however long he lasts on your team.
I like John Brown a lot. I mean, we've seen him now with two strong-armed quarterbacks be extremely successful, Joe Flacco and Josh Allen. Yeah, he's fallen off a little bit of late, but the matchups have not been great. I believe it's Denver, Dallas, and Baltimore, each of the last three, which I believe are all top 10 right now in terms of fantasy points given up to wide receivers. But he's been great. He's getting consistent targets. He's basically gotten five or more targets in the first 11 games, and then he had 4 and 4 against Denver and Dallas and 8 against Baltimore. Like, he's been getting targeted. He's been getting yards, and he's not necessarily scoring all that much, and he's still putting up points. So I really like John Brown. In terms of Devin Singletary, I don't know why they wouldn't keep him in that role. The guy has been effective as hell since he got back from his injury. He's had double-digit carries in 5 of the last 6 games. He's only had 1 game below 4 yards per carry. And I know yards per carry is not a great metric for running backs, but to have every game except for 1 in your rookie season above 4 yards per carry has been fantastic. And if you actually chart his offensive snaps, they're going up basically all the time. So I have no idea why anybody would worry about him retaining that role when he's been so effective. Not to mention, and I don't know what TJ Yeldon's contract looks like, but they traded for TJ Yeldon. He was an effective back for Jacksonville. He can be an effective third down or a third down back and relieve Singletary every once in a while. So I don't know why.
Assuming that, you know, Frank Gore is retired, which, will never happen.
You never know. But it's Singletary's job. There's no way they should spend more capital at least more significant capital at running back.
No, they should be trying to get younger at some of the other offensive positions.
By the way, I have to make amends on Josh Allen. I was very low on Josh Allen entering the season. I honestly predicted, very, very skeptical. I actually predicted he would be outside of the top 20 in terms of fantasy quarterbacks. He has been a lot better passer this season. He and Lamar Jackson. Yes, I had to sneak Lamar Jackson in there. Just you people relax.
Of course.
Are both throwing above 60%. Well, actually, Josh Allen just dipped below 60%, but he's up 7 percentage points in terms of his completion percentage from last year. His interception percentage has dropped. His touchdown percentage is up. And he's running the ball relatively well. So I was very wrong about Josh Allen. And I'm sorry.
All right. Who am I talking about? Sam Lane. 8th in overall routes run. Number of routes run. 8th in targets. 9th in total target share. 10th in overall dominator rating on his team. 10th in red zone receptions. seems to kind of be going unheralded just a little bit. I think he's a top 12 receiver, and he's showing that now in the worst of situations. I mean, do I have to say it? Do you know who it is?
Well, I have three people in mind. I want to say it's Cortland Sutton.
Could be. It could be.
But Kenny Golladay also comes to mind.
Kenny Golladay is another one that's been having himself a season. But I think the guy with the worst quarterback of the lot is Allen Robinson. Yeah. And Allen Robinson has been having himself a season in one of the worst passing attacks in the NFL, despite Mitchell Trubisky's recent resurgence. Is it time that we start looking at Allen Robinson as the 1,400-yard receiver that he was a year ago, given that he can do this in this situation on this team where it seems that nothing is working offensively?
We should have before. Here's the issue. Coming in, so last season was his first season coming off of an ACL injury. We all know about the notorious recovery from ACL injury.
And on a new team.
Right, and on a new team with a very new quarterback in his second season. So it's just one of those things where it was just kind of a perfect storm of situations where he probably wasn't going to perform well anyway. And then now you have a 1,400-yard, 14-touchdown wide receiver coming back in his second season with this quarterback. He's already performed with a bad quarterback, somebody who you've compared his current quarterback to.
He got him twice.
He should have been one of the buys of the offseason, really. If we with 2020, obviously 2020 hindsight, but when we look at it and look at the situation, he should have been one of the buys of the offseason.
I think he went in the fifth, sixth round in most cases. I mean, yeah, he's been a guy that he's excelling despite what's around him. And I think those are the guys that you can be safe investing in long term. I would say that with Allen Robinson, he's going into year three of his contract, but this is the last year of his contract next season. So maybe there's some hope. Maybe he gets out of QB purgatory, or maybe he just keeps scoring touchdowns and it doesn't matter how many yards he goes for because he's the guy they look for in those situations.
I'm hoping that the last two games have indicated that Matt Nagy and Mitch Trubisky are figuring it out, and that maybe Mitch Trubisky needs to get outside of the pocket because that's where he excels. But I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, if he's putting up the numbers that he has this season with how Mitchell Trubisky has performed this season, except for the past two games, then I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I do think that Allen Robinson going into next season needs to be seen as a legitimate, I mean, if not top 12, like top 14 receiver. I really do think that he's in that range. He just is finding a way to get it done in the worst of circumstances, and that's something that you really should want on your team because you know you can put him out there week in, week out, and not be disappointed most of the time. Just like Alvin Kamara, he's definitely going to have those games where maybe he doesn't necessarily get those huge booms for you, but he gets the volume that nobody else gets in Chicago. Anthony Miller hasn't broken out in the way that a lot of people thought he was going to this year. Trey Burton's found himself.
He has of late, by the way. I'm gonna stick up for J. Mike's guy. Anthony Miller's gotten a lot more involved like the past.
He's gotten more involved, but people thought he was going to be a top 24 receiver this year, top 12 receiver, some people, and I don't think that we're at that level yet. Now, we were going to talk about breakout receivers, other breakout receivers, receivers changing their values, but we'll save that for our next episode. Now we're going to move straight into the part that I know that you guys are all waiting for. We're going to plug in the analyzer and get to this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. This is episode 53, and for our episode 53 roster, Will Dennison, the Giant Ninja, on Twitter, went ahead and sent us his roster. Please be sure to give him a follow. If you want to be part of the next show, go ahead and follow the podcast at Dino Diagnostic on Twitter. Smash that subscribe button. Leave a review at the link in the description on iTunes. and or Podbean. Now let's get into the roster that we have here. It is a 12-team Superflex, 1 point per reception for RBs, 1.25 for wide receivers, 1.5 for tight ends, and 1.5 for every 10 yards, 6 point passing TD, start one quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, a tight end, a super flex, and a flex. So let's now start somewhere weird, just because I feel like it. Let's start at tight ends. We got Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Ryan Griffin, who's recently signed to a contract extension that I think officially means that Chris Herndon is dead. If there was a bridge to him that you wanted to build, I don't think that would be wise. It might be a bridge to nowhere. Yes, that was a pun. Jordan Akins, Vance McDonald, and Jeff Swaim. This is completely unrelated, but for some reason, I think because Jeff Swaim was on the team last year, this came to my mind, so I'm going to talk about this guy right now, but not on this team, because I think this team is completely fine at tight end with Kelce and Kittle, but I think that Blake Jarwin could be a great buy this offseason.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we've seen Jason Witten get involved. Blake Jarwin is far and away the more athletic tight end there. I mean, obviously the 38-year-old versus the 23-year-old, which one's going to be more athletic? But yeah, I think that once hopefully Witten is done after this season, Jarwin, I mean, he showed us flashes at the end of last season. He showed us flashes this season of that athleticism. Now he just needs to get the target share.
All right, so now going back to the team. Again, Kelce, Kittle, Griffin, Akins, McDonald, Swaim. You don't need Travis Kelce and George Kittle on the same team. I think that you can get an arm and a leg for Travis Kelce. I don't necessarily think that you need to do it on this team unless you want to shore up for just having a lot of options in the future. But I think I'm pulling the trigger on trading Travis Kelce in most circumstances here with this tight end group, because I like Ryan Griffin as a backup, and I think Jordan Akins can be something decent as well.
Yeah, I mean, this – because of the tight end premium, I see exactly what he did here with this build, and I think it's a savvy, I suppose, build. It's not how I would have done it, but I get why he did it. And getting Kelce and Kittle, and they have to be top two right now at wide receiver, but getting two of the top three tight ends in the league and scoring that allows you to get a lot more points from those tight ends. This is great because then you can start two of the top three tight ends week in, week out, and have that leg up on your competition.
Yeah, you can definitely do that. But just from a dynasty perspective, just looking forward on this team, not that Travis Kelce is getting all that old, because I do think tight ends can still be valued contributors well into their 30s. I just think that, I mean, with Kittle and Griffin and Akins, even on a tight end premium team, with how your receiver room looks, even though it doesn't necessarily look bad, I think that I would probably sell for an additional tight end back, as well as some help in the wide receiver area. And I think we can now move into wide receivers. I know this has been talked about on multiple podcasts. What's going on with OBJ? We're hearing that maybe he wants to leave Cleveland at this point. We've seen OBJ be the wide receiver too for Cleveland for a lot of the season. Jarvis Landry kind of get that wide receiver one role with Baker Mayfield. Baker's having his own struggles. Freddie Kitchens is having his struggles. We haven't even seen this offense with the other target that they have in David Njoku really on the field so much this season. Are we worried about Odell Beckham Jr. moving forward? And if we are, what does that mean for this wide receiver group as a whole? Again, Hill, OBJ, Woods, John Brown, Brandon Cooks, Anthony Miller. And I'm going to stop there.
I'm not worried about OBJ. Listen, I think people just put, including you, put Baker on this pedestal after they got OBJ. And this is why we wait until we play the games. But we see this constantly. We see the second year or the sophomore slumps from these quarterbacks because you get tape on them. You see their tendencies, and defenses have figured them out. Now, again, he has had issues with, as you mentioned, Freddie Kitchens, his offensive line.
That was going to be my go-to here. I mean, the things that he did well last season that made Baker Mayfield a good quarterback, they're not doing this season. Last season, they didn't use 11 personnel nearly as much as they used it this season because they're trying to get OBJ involved. They had more protection for Baker Mayfield with an offensive line that lost Kevin Zeitler. This season, they're having to do it differently, and I don't think that's helping either Baker or OBJ.
But Baker has definitely had his struggles in terms of reads, in terms of decision-making. Now, this is probably a case of a new wide receiver on a new team with a new quarterback, a young quarterback, much like Allen Robinson, OBJ is coming off of injuries. He is playing with a sports hernia, which usually shuts down players. I think OBJ is a buy this offseason.
What are you spending on Odell? Because, I mean, I think name alone, that's multiple firsts. And I don't know if I want to do that right now for a 27-year-old receiver that might change teams again.
Well, I'm doing that. I mean, if I can do a first and a player for OBJ, for a game-breaking wide receiver that OBJ is, and yes, he still is that wide receiver despite this season, I'm going to spend that. Because if that's the piece that I need to win a championship, and he goes from, and I don't even know if he's top 24 right now, but if he goes from his value, let's just say of two firsts right now, to back to where he was like the previous four seasons, then you've gained that value and more. And he's probably helping you to, at the very least, into the championship game.
Odell Beckham Jr.'s case is an interesting one because the Browns actually have no incentive to do anything with Odell Beckham Jr. In fact, I would implore them not to because it really doesn't make sense from a financial perspective. Odell Beckham Jr., talent-wise, we think is one of the best receivers in the league. I don't think I'm going to have too many people coming at me for that. If that's the case, I mean, he's signed to a reasonable contract for the next three seasons at the very least, coming off that brand new deal that he signed with the New York Giants right before they traded him during that year's offseason. Odell Beckham Jr. is 26 now, and he signed through 2023 at an average annual salary of just around $15 million a year. Jarvis Landry makes that. Him and Jarvis Landry make about the same money. I mean, is this a situation where they keep the band together? Can the Browns afford to pay two $15 million annual receivers on the same team for the foreseeable future? Is this a situation where because of Jarvis Landry coming out this season and having a solid season that you think they decide to keep them both? Or is this kind of a situation where Odell gets his wish and he gets out of Cleveland because they do have to pay just one and not the other?
I think it would be ridiculous for them not to keep both, especially with Baker on his rookie contract, especially with Chubb on his rookie contract, especially with Njoku still on his rookie contract. By the way, Landry, everybody thought Landry was going to have that breakout season last season, having that breakout season this season. This is what happens with new wide receivers or wide receivers going to new teams. It takes a while to get used to a new quarterback. It takes a while to get that chemistry. So I think it would behoove them to keep both of those wide receivers, let OBJ get that chemistry, let Freddie Kitchens. I think the biggest issue right now is Freddie Kitchens. He either needs to give up play calling or he needs to be fired, because it sounds like he's kind of lost that locker room. So he needs – I mean, I don't know what the purpose of hiring Todd Monken was if you're not going to give him play calling duties. And that's what it seems like Freddie Kitchens has done. So give the play calling to Todd Monken. You be just a head coach. That's fine. Be a head coach. Let Todd Monken call the plays. Let Baker and OBJ get some chemistry, and then see what happens next season.
I get it. I really do think that OBJ is going to be very, very good moving forward. I do have some concerns about paying multiple firsts for him, considering the multiple running backs that I know are going to be starting day one I could get in this draft coming up. But, I mean, you have to pay what you have to pay for OBJ. If OBJ was firing and Tyreek Hill was firing because Patrick Mahomes wasn't hurt or Tyreek wasn't hurt, this team would be way and above where it needs to be at wide receiver. But right now, we have Hill, we have OBJ, we have Robert Woods. We talked about John Brown, who we think is having a solid season and probably should be kept additionally for a couple of more seasons. Is there an additional guy that you think maybe other than a Preston Williams that you would add to this team? Or do you think that help is probably needed elsewhere instead and you'd keep wide receiver just as it is?
I'd keep wide receiver as it is. I mean, you still have Tyreek Hill, who arguably top five. I mean, yes, you think he is the wide receiver one in terms of dynasty. OBJ, I think, is in for a bounce back season. Woods is starting to show up here and I think has a future on a different team, and he will be at least a top 24 wide receiver. Like we talked about, John Brown with Josh Allen is fantastic. I think Cooks has a bounce back season next season. Anthony Miller starting to flash. When you do have to start three, but you're basically riding six deep at this point, and I think you're fine. Now we can talk about running back here, and that's where I think the most help is needed, or these next two positions where the help is needed.
Yeah, quarterback is probably where I'm going to come in with it, but we'll go with you with running back first. Saquon 01, as Brian Harr would say, shout out if you're listening. Melvin Gordon, Mark Ingram, Damian Williams, Raheem Mostert, Adrian Peterson, Jerick McKinnon, and Rodney Anderson. Saquon Barkley, I mean, he has dealt with it all this year. He's dealt with injuries, and he's dealt with teams playing the Giants like they can't throw the football at all. And it has not been helping OBJ so far this year. And I think this was the fear.
Barkley, with, not OBJ.
It wasn't helping Saquon Barkley this year. And I think the fear with OBJ leaving was that it would leave Saquon on an island. I think we've seen that of sorts, as well as obviously having the rookie quarterback. Melvin Gordon, I think everybody agrees he's not likely to be a Charger next season. There's 1.5 million backs coming in this next draft that could definitely be a lot cheaper than Melvin Gordon. I do think he will get a contract somewhere. I don't necessarily know if it will work out the way that team intends it to. Mark Ingram is still signed for another season after this season, so he still has the capability of being the lead Ravens running back next season, although I do think that Gus Edwards can continue to have his role in that offense, and if anything happens to Ingram, who has not been completely the healthiest throughout his career, I do think that Gus might be able to take that role. But beyond those, Damian Williams, I mean, I don't really think there's too much of a future for him going forward. Raheem Mostert, I mean, one of Tevin Coleman or Raheem Mostert or Matt Breda or Debo Samuel, if they want to put him in the backfield. There's so many moving pieces in San Francisco with that offense in terms of who's running the ball that I just don't know how comfortable you can be with that. Adrian Peterson, Darius Geis, they're still going to be battling for the next couple of seasons. And beyond that, there's not much here. I think the three headliners with Barkley, Gordon, and Ingram is just fine. I just feel that one of Gordon or Ingram could definitely fall off next year, and that would leave you in a precarious position with only two running backs you can really feel confident for the 2020 season. So kind of like you, I do think that some additions are needed here. What would you do with this running back room?
You are old. Old. It's really a toss up here. I think Eitan's right that you probably, and we'll talk about QB in a second, but you probably do need to make an addition at QB. I mean, if you can get someone like Singletary for a little bit cheaper, I think he's going to step into an awesome role next season. Joe Mixon might be actually a buy right now if you really think about it, because I believe I saw a tweet today that said Mixon has been a top five running back since whatever week, but he's been heavily involved of late. He's the RB4. Sorry, RB7 in points per game over the past 5 weeks. So, he started off the season slow, and he's just been much more involved in the second half of the season. So he could probably be a buy low type as well. Maybe not a super buy low, but a buy low nonetheless. You need a wide receiver or an RB2 that's a little bit younger and can step in if somebody like Ingram or Gordon goes down. And those are a couple that I would think, like I said, Joe Mixon, Devin Singletary, maybe think about somebody like Miles Sanders, who maybe people will forget that Jordan Howard's contract is up after next season and he doesn't have a lot of competition in that Eagles backfield next season. But I would be looking somewhere there, buying low or trying to buy on a second year running back.
Yeah, I think old is definitely the term that needs to kind of be accentuated here. At running back, you really want your oldest running back that you're counting on week to week to be 25, 26 or younger. That's kind of where we're at with running backs. Running backs have their most productive season generally in their first three seasons in the league. So these are the guys that you really want to capitalize on. That's why I think Devin Singletary is definitely a good buy. But I'd also kind of kick the tires on guys that I talked about as being really dangerous buys moving forward just because of the price. Geis, the price of acquisition can't be that high. Kerryon Johnson, price of acquisition can't be that high as well. And with the team built as it is, you could potentially have that RB2 in Mark Ingram and Melvin Gordon already on the team and have a little bit of time for a younger guy that might not necessarily be that consistent to develop. So I would definitely kick the tires on some guys that are dealing with injuries that you can kind of afford to maybe buy low on, wait on, and see what happens with your team next season, especially since you don't have the picks to acquire them this year in your league's rookie draft. Moving on to quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. I almost think this is a Dynasty Outhouse team because he has these guys on every single league that I'm with him, on every Superflex team. Mahomes, Watson, behind them, not much though. We have Matt Moore, Brandon Allen, who's never going to play another game for the Denver Broncos. Hopefully Drew Lock stays healthy. Easton Stick, maybe he gets a shot if they decide not to go with Tyrod, or Tyrod disappoints and they decide not to keep Phillip Rivers. But there's not much certainty when it comes to these three quarterbacks. This is where I'd buy a guy like Gardner Minshew, just to add him to the pile, because the price of acquisition shouldn't be that high, but he can still be a guy that might be able to help you next season, assuming that he wins the job. Is there a guy or two that you have in mind to kind of shore up this quarterback group?
So I'm going to see something a little bit wild for me. I would look at selling Patrick Mahomes on name value. If you could get somebody like, let's say, a Matt Stafford and Devin Singletary, and maybe you can get a pick out of that too. I would be doing that. And then I would also sell like Travis Kelce for a younger tight end, maybe for a Noah Fant and a pick, or Noah Fant and another QB. Let's just say, I don't even know who you could get at this point. Maybe Drew Lock, if he continues to excel, or Ryan Tannehill. I would be selling those top end assets to get some to fill some of those holes we've talked about.
Kelce, I definitely agree with. I don't know if I'd be selling Mahomes at this time, not because I'm not down with the strategy of breaking up your biggest asset. I'm always advocating for that in dynasty leagues. Oftentimes, it's quantity that gets you over the line because of all these injuries that we have. It's quantity that still keeps you in the game. But I don't think you're getting value for Patrick Mahomes right now. Yes, there is name value, but kind of just like Saquon Barkley right now, I think if you're selling them, I mean, I don't think you're going to get the same value you would have received 6 months ago or 6 months from now. And so I think that the time for selling Patrick Mahomes isn't necessarily now. If I had to sell one of those quarterbacks, I'd be selling Watson because Watson has kind of had the better season of the two. And I think that people would give me more for that.
I don't necessarily know. I get what your argument is. I don't necessarily know if I agree that the value changes all that much with Mahomes, because Mahomes, despite, like, I mean, he has had those injuries. Despite that, he has had those. I mean, he started the season as a top two QB again. So I think name value. I think name value is still going to give him. You're still going to get QB1, dynasty QB1 value out of Patrick Mahomes at this point in time.
You get Aaron Jones and Hunter Henry. Are you selling Saquon Barkley right now?
If I could get Aaron Jones and Hunter Henry. Oh, that's tough. In this league, I think I'd need like Evan Ingram over Hunter Henry, personally.
You still rank Evan Ingram over Hunter Henry?
Yep, I do.
Is there any concern about any of the niggling injuries he seems to get over and over again? As he is an undersized tight end, we kind of saw a really bright flash and then kind of down to earth with Jordan Reed because he was a smaller tight end that seemed to be nicked up often as well.
I mean, it's a valid point. I think just because he's so young that I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And because he's been so dominant in his first two seasons. Hunter Henry is like that second tier of tight end for me. And whereas I can see Evan Ingram reaching that top tier of tight end, but I mean, it's a valid trade. I don't know. I hesitate more with Aaron Jones than anything, just because he can be taken out of a game. Like, he's got four.
Josh Jacobs, then.
No, it would definitely be Aaron Jones over Josh Jacobs. I probably would do it. Aaron Jones and Hunter Henry for Saquon right now.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if I'm going to move a big piece, I think that's kind of where I do it. Just because, again, this is a dynasty. This is super flex. Quarterbacks are as valuable as every other position in this one. And Mahomes and Watson are still super young. Saquon Barkley is super young too. But, I mean, in 3 years, we're not going to be saying that just with the nature of how running backs work.
I agree with that. But the thing for me is, If you can sell those top end assets, like I said, Kelce and Patrick Mahomes, get like a Devin Singletary, get a lower tier quarterback, and then like with Kelce, get another quarterback and a lower tier tight end or an up and coming tight end like Noah Fant, then I would do that, because then you have those pieces to not only compete now, but compete into the future.
All right, we have come to the final point. It's the final countdown. We are making our final diagnosis on this team. This team's amazing. I don't really know how you build this team. I guess I do know, because I look at your picks now, and it looks like you spent a significant amount to go ahead and get the extra piece or two that kind of puts you over the top. But this is a very, very, very solid team. Honestly, the only thing you have to worry about moving forward is that QB3 and maybe having an additional RB on this team. And there are so many options that you have to go ahead and get those things done. So for me, this team, this is an S500. You know, maybe it's not the nicest car in the world, but I mean, it's a baller car. You pull up in that, people look at you. And I really do think that this is coming up with the windows tinted, the big wheels and big rims and everything. This is what you want in a luxury car that's got some speed to it. It's got crazy, crazy things happening under the hood. This is an S-Class. This is nice. This is a $100,000, $150,000 car. This is a great team.
I completely agree. I think it's around that same level of car, just with some mileage on it. Let's just say you have 50,000 miles on it, and at some point you're anticipating that something is going to break down inside of that engine, and whether that be Gordon or Ingram, or maybe OBJ doesn't work out, or maybe you lose one of your quarterbacks, like I'm sure you did this season with Patrick Mahomes, and you were trying to survive with Matt Moore and Watson. This is a fantastic car. Runs well, but at some point your mileage is getting up there, and you've used it and driven it enough that something is going to break in that engine, and that's where you need to do some preventative maintenance to make sure that doesn't happen.
That is going to be the end of it today. Please make sure you follow your head technicians. You can follow me on Twitter at ETANMosia. Go ahead and follow FF Stompy for Sam. Follow the Scott Fish Bowl. Both myself and Sam find ourselves in, what are these, the semis?
Conference finals.
Conference finals coming up this week in the Scott Fish Bowl. Will Sam repeat?
I'm going to be riding
back to back as a podcast.
I'm going to be riding Mitch True Bortles to that championship again. Just to piss you off, Eitan.
You just might. Mitch Trubisky's been having himself some games moving forward. Next week, we will talk about Mecole Hardman. We will talk about Deebo Samuel. We will talk about Juju and Stephon Diggs and some of the crazy, crazy wide receiver value changes that we have to decipher going into next season. But for today, au revoir. It was a great, great time doing the podcast. As always, please make sure to go ahead to the Dynasty Diagnostic podcast feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps the podcast grow and reach more listeners. As always, we have Patreon and Store Envy FF Pod Shirts. That is Dynasty Outhouse's store. Go ahead and get a Dynasty Diagnostic shirt there if you would like to. I think there's also Superflex, Super Show, and Sam, what were the others?
Trade Addicts Pod and Top Shelf. Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/dynodiagnostic. And again, that's storeenvy.com and search FF Pod Shirts.
All of this information, I believe, you can find on our Twitter. So if you're
by the way, 10% of the purchases from the FF Pod Shirts goes to Fantasy Cares. So you're not only supporting us, but you're supporting a great cause that Scott Fish started.
Perfect. And thank you for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you on your next visit.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is rolling a roll that I'm told. Comparable to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seat, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see now.
Nastic. Nastic.